You know what they say about bear markets? They slide a slope of hope, a false slope of hope where people continue to believe that they're getting to buy the bottom in stocks and that the market is going to rip to new highs. But as you saw this week in the stock market, all that false hope ended up being a very wrong narrative for a lot of investors that think that this is a good time to get in at the bottom and buy stocks, especially the more growth-oriented names, like the names that are in the NASDAQ or the ARK Innovation Fund. But the stock market as a whole got completely clobbered on Friday. The S&P 500 finished the day down 2.8%. The NASDAQ was in even worse shape, down 3.8% on Friday alone. Now, as bad as stocks acted on Friday throughout the day, the market actually managed to finish positive on the week. And a lot of investors might not even realize that because of how bad the carnage in the stock market was later on in the week. But again, Monday and Tuesday, the stock market had a major bear market rally, and we now know that that was a bear market rally. Again, a lot of people were suckered into buying on Monday and Tuesday on economic data that was released earlier in the week, and then we got conflicting economic data later on in the week, all of which I'll cover in a little bit, and that caused people to then sell stocks, and then we then recognized that the bear market rally was a bear market rally and that this bear market is still fully intact. But of course, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know this all along, because as I've been saying, the stock market has to go much lower from here. And there is too many fundamentals, economics, and there are too many factors that should cause the market to go down and prevent the market from going and making newer highs. And again, some of the biggest rallies always occur in bear markets. As investors slide that false slope of hope, right? People get excited when the market starts to rally. People think, okay, the bottom's in. I got to get in now. I got to buy the dip so that when the stock market rips to new all-time record highs, I have more stock exposure and then therefore make more money. The buying the dip strategy has worked for the past decade plus because every time the market has been sliding down, there has been some sort of stimulative policy either out of the Federal Reserve, the federal government, or from artificially low interest rates there to continue to prop the market back up. But all of this easy money policy that led to the stock market having tremendous returns over the past decade is now not only being taken away, but being reversed. And so as interest rates continue to move higher, the stock market is going to continue to move lower. Make no mistake about it. We are early in this bear market. Not only are we early in this bear market in that we have a long way down to go, but we are also early in this bear market as it's going to continue for years to come. Again, a lot of investors are also getting the false hope that most bear markets only tend to last for a couple of, for 1 year or 2 years at the most, in most cases. And so therefore, a lot of people are thinking we've had a lot of pain, particularly over the first 9 months of the year. And so even if we have a rough fall and winter, that once we get into 2023, that the market is going to start making new highs. Again, this is completely false hope. And everyone who is saying that, which is basically the general consensus, has no idea what is fundamentally going on in these markets. Now, the market is down for the most part this year because of rising interest rates. It's inflation, which is driving higher interest rates, and it's higher interest rates, which is driving the stock market lower. But now the market has basically priced in both a 75 basis point rate hike in the November Fed meeting, and then another 50 basis point rate hike in the December meeting. So the market is expecting interest rates to go up 1.25% before year end. And again, a lot of that is the pain that we've experienced over the past couple of weeks, because again, the market has been pricing in that extra 1.25% worth of interest rate hikes for several weeks now. But of course, we have a lot longer to go if we're going to get inflation under control. And I'll talk about that more in a bit. But I want to cover some of the more recognized names in the market, the names that everyone in the market owns, especially the stock market bulls, the names that are always talked about on CNBC. Look at shares of AMD, one of the semiconductor stocks. Again, all the bulls love the semiconductor space, which happens to be probably the most discretionary space in all of the markets. AMD lowered their forward guidance last week, and so therefore the stock is getting clobbered. AMD was down 13.9% on Friday. Now, again, people might think that this is a stock that is worth buying because it's gotten very cheap. AMD closed the week out at $58 per share. Over 9 months ago, this stock was trading at over $100 per share. But the market is still very expensive. If you look at AMD, AMD still trades at 24 times earnings. And that, by the way, is trailing earnings. That's what they've earned in the last 12 months. Just because they earned that amount of money in the last 12 months doesn't mean they'll continue to make that much money in the coming months, especially, again, as the economy heads into recession and we see lower demand for consumers buying things that require semiconductors. And so 24 times earnings in and of itself is very expensive for a stock, but it is very expensive for a stock as well if the earnings in the future are going to decline. Look at shares of NVIDIA. NVIDIA, again, one of the names. This basically is known as a blue chip stock now after the past couple of years. It had a huge run up, but this stock down 8% on Friday following AMD down lower. But look at how it's performed on the year. NVIDIA has been cut down 60% since January. So again, anyone with exposure to NVIDIA in their portfolio is losing a ton of money there, but look at how expensive this stock still is. NVIDIA still trades at 39 times trailing earnings. That is extremely expensive, especially in a higher interest rate environment, and that's one of the reasons why the stock has been knocked down so much. Again, not only are we heading to recession and the earnings for AMD and NVIDIA are at risk because they depend highly on a good economy, but also as interest rates are rising, their multiples are getting compressed because, as I've mentioned before, the higher interest rates go, the less stocks are worth because a stock is worth the present value of all future earnings discounted to the current rate of interest. And so as the current rate of interest moves higher, stock prices, all else equal, have to move lower. But again, earnings guidance is going down for these stocks because the economy is heading into a recession. Looking at some of the other names from other sectors that are beloved among many of the stock market bulls, especially over the past year, look at shares of Zoom Video. Zoom is down 58% year to date. Again, still extremely overvalued. They're underperforming in basically every earnings report that they put out. And this stock continues to free fall, again, with the rest of the markets sliding that false slope of hope. Square, or now known as Block, is down 65% year to date. Again, this stock also remains extremely expensive. They barely have any earnings. Again, huge growth stock, has exposure to crypto. A lot of people love this name. A lot of people love the CEO, Jack Dorsey. This stock has gotten crushed along with a lot of other stocks in the ARK Innovation Fund this year. Look at shares of Palantir. Now, Palantir is down 56% year to date. Now, this company actually has some good underlying fundamentals, but the point I want to make here is the stock is still extremely overpriced. Again, this stock is now trading around $8 per share. Had you bought it about a year and a half ago, you would have paid about $30 to $32 per share for this stock. But again, just because the stock has been cut down basically by 75% in the last 12 months does not mean that you are getting a bargain here. Palantir, which is still losing money, is priced at 10 times sales. Now, historically speaking, a company should not be priced over more than 2, 3, or 4 times sales, depending on the growth of the company. But especially for a company that doesn't have any earnings, and especially heading into a recession, and especially in a rising interest rate environment, stocks should not trade at 10 times sales, especially again if they're a very unproven business model that is yet to become profitable. But also apply this to shares of Rivian. If you look at Rivian, the electric automaker that's very new to the market, they're down 66% year to date. They still trade at 56 times earnings, or sorry, times sales. They don't have any earnings. In fact, they barely have any manufacturing set up, any logistics, any supply chain. They're just getting started. They barely have any cars on the road, right? They barely have any sales, but they trade at 56 times sales. That is a completely ridiculous valuation, even with the stock down 66% year to date. So again, looking at all these stocks, prices can have to continue to fall, because even though some of the air has come out of the stock market bubble in the last year, there's still plenty of air left in this bubble, right? We still have record high stock prices relative to earnings for these companies and relative to sales for these companies. Again, these stocks have a much longer way to fall. Now, again, a lot of the stocks I just talked about are stocks that are in the ARK Innovation Fund. And a lot of people think that the ARK Innovation Fund is a great value here. Now, the fund has basically been trading sideways for each of the past 3 months. So a lot of investors, I think, are getting, again, false hope that the stocks in the ARK Innovation Fund have bottomed. But, you know, markets usually don't give you an opportunity to buy the bottom like that. It's usually, once a stock bottoms, it doesn't stay at the bottom very long. It's very rare that stocks hold a bottom for 3 months and then start to rise back up. So again, it's false hope here. And even though these stocks have held up relatively well over the past 3 months, you can see that they're starting to roll over again, especially with the action in the markets this past Thursday and Friday. And so these stocks still have a much longer way to fall. Again, I don't want to get into the details too much of any individual stock, but if you look at shares of Rivian, a fair value for that business might be 2 or 3 times sales, not 56 times sales. So the stock still has to fall probably 70, 80, 90% before it gets to any real type of fair value. So again, a lot of the stocks I'm talking about have the same amount to fall here. Even if you look at companies that are more established but are still not yet profitable, look at Airbnb, down 37% this year. Airbnb is still trading at 9 times sales. Again, they're not profitable yet. They're a business that depends on a good economy in order to drive profitability and revenues, right? The economy is weakening, the consumer is weakening, and this company still trades at 9 times sales. Again, it's still extremely expensive valuation to pay for a business that is not yet profitable. And that, look, has already scaled throughout the entire world. I mean, there's not much left for Airbnb to grow into this valuation. At least if you look at a stock like Palantir, Palantir only has 139 customers for its software data. Well, they have room to grow because they can gain more customers. But when you look at a stock like Airbnb, there's not very much room to grow because they're already involved in many markets in many different countries around the world. And again, they're revenues are probably going to decline as we continue to head further into recession, but they still trade at 9 times sales, still extremely expensive. Moving over to MicroStrategy, which I want to mention real quick. MicroStrategy is down about 90% from its all-time high price. Back about 2 years ago, when the CEO of the company, Michael Saylor, first announced that MicroStrategy was going to be putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet, the stock rallied all the way up to past $1,200 per share. The stock is now trading down below $300 per share right now. And it still trades at a 30% premium for the amount of Bitcoin on its balance sheet. At this point, nobody is valuing this company based on their actual core business. The only people buying the stock are buying it because of the amount of Bitcoin they hold on their balance sheet. But MicroStrategy's stock price is worth 30% more than all of the Bitcoin that they hold on their balance sheet. Conversely, if you look at the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, That trades at about a 30% discount to its NAV, which means that it's 30% cheaper than all the Bitcoin that are located within that fund. So again, no institutions here are really coming in to buy things with exposure to Bitcoin, because if institutions were buying, what they would be buying would be the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. So the fact that MicroStrategy is trading at a 30% premium to the amount of Bitcoin it owns, when the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is trading at a 30% discount to the Bitcoin it owns, shows that there's still a ton of speculation in the markets, right? MicroStrategy is trading at that premium because of the amount of short interest in the stock. So you have a lot of people buying that stock, hoping for a potential short squeeze in the future, which means you still have a lot of people gambling and speculating in the markets. And again, that shows that there's a lot more froth, a lot more air that is still to come out of this bubble. Now, moving to a more mature stock, still, again, a popular stock, Amazon is down 32% this year. Again, this is another one that the investors on CNBC love. They talk about all the time. They've bought it 6 months ago. They're buying more now. Again, they are getting crushed in this name. But again, it's still not a cheap stock. Is it profitable? Sure. Is its cloud business growing? Sure. But look at the core business of Amazon. The core business of Amazon is struggling dearly. One, because again, the economy is slowing. So you have less people buying packages on Amazon, right? Because their consumer has less disposable income to buy discretionary items. But two, the cost of delivering those products is rising substantially, not only because labor costs are up substantially year over year, but so is the cost of energy and the cost of oil. And oil, as I'm speaking, is trading over $92 per barrel, had a huge rise on the week. OPEC is cutting production. I'm not going to get too much into that, but as I've been saying in the past couple weeks on this podcast, oil is going to rebound and be back over $100 per barrel before we know it. So you have costs for Amazon skyrocketing all over. And again, this stock is still extremely expensive, even though it's down 32% year to date. It's still trading at 104 times earnings. Now, again, there is growth potential there, right? You have Amazon Fresh. They're going into the grocery market. They're starting to get into the pharmaceuticals industry with delivering pharmaceuticals to people's homes. But again, despite that growth, 104 PE ratio is an extremely expensive price to earnings price for a stock, especially again, as interest rates are rising and multiples need to be coming down. Last but not least, Carvana is down 92% on the year. Now, if you look at the corporate debt for Carvana, if you buy a corporate bond and lend money to Carvana, that bond is currently yielding 20%. Now, that bond is considered a junk bond because there is a high probability of a default on that debt. So Carvana is getting close to reaching bankruptcy. Now, there's a lot going on with that stock, but again, one, their costs are rising, right? Because they have rising labor costs, rising energy costs. It's getting more expensive for them to deliver their vehicles. And also the consumer is weakening. You have car sales are dropping in the United States. Although they're not dropping very rapidly just yet, they are dropping substantially. And again, Americans don't have the money to buy new or used cars. So that is why they are fixing up their old clunker cars. And that is why AutoZone continues to be one of the best performing stocks in this market. Because again, people are fixing their old cars up. They're not buying new and used cars to the extent they were 2 or 3 years ago. Now, despite that slowdown, there is a good amount of consumer spending continuing to occur in the auto market. Now, this week, I saw an interview on CNBC, which I couldn't even believe, but it's actually occurred that people are now taking out loans as high as $1,000 monthly payment loans to buy cars. So now you have people buying cars and taking out an auto loan so big to where their monthly payment on that auto loan is over $1,000 a month. Okay, so the average consumer buying a car in the third quarter borrowed $41,347 to buy their car. They're paying an average interest rate of 5.7%. And again, a lot of these payments, these monthly payments, are over $1,000 a month. The average car payment in America now is $703 a month. So even if you break this down even further, in March of 2021, 6% of all auto loans were $1,000 a month payments. In September of 2021, that number rose to 9%. In March 2022, that number rose to 10%. And now we saw in the past 6 months, up to September 2022, just last month, 14% of all auto loans made in America are now $1,000 monthly payments. So again, where is this being captured in the CPI? The CPI is showing that used car prices are coming down, yet what we see on the consumer side of things is that the cost of buying a vehicle is actually rising substantially. And again, this is something that I said last week. I pointed out that as the Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates, what that is going to do in the short term is put more upward pressure on consumer prices, because consumers don't just have to pay the price of what they're buying, they also have to pay the cost to service the debt to take on whatever it is they're buying. So consumers who are buying used or new cars now are paying a higher rate of interest on their car payments, and so therefore that is driving up the cost of owning a vehicle. And so again, we continue to see the consumer is struggling so much that they have to take on auto loans of $1,000 a month or more. And most of these auto loans are 7 or 8 year loans. Again, if you can't buy a car and pay it off in 3, 4, or 5 years, you are buying a car that you cannot afford. If it takes you 7 or 8 years to pay off your auto loan, you are buying too expensive of a car. But again, of course, the loans that are being made with $1,000 a month payments are on more expensive vehicles. But nonetheless, even for the lower end vehicles where people are buying used cars, they are buying the lower end of the car market because they have no choice. Maybe they need a new car, but you know they don't have the money to buy it. But again, the average monthly payment on a car is now $703 a month. And that means that there's less disposable income for middle and lower middle class Americans to be able to spend on discretionary items. So again, this is making the consumer even weaker. To finish up on that point, though, Scott Adams, who was doing this interview on CNBC, he's the CEO of Adams Auto Group, and he said that 50% of all of their customers have auto payments over $1,000 a month for people who bought cars with them over the past month. So they are seeing 50% of people buying cars are now buying them with $1,000 monthly payments or higher, which means, again, the consumer is completely tapped out here. We have the lowest savings rate in the economy since 2007, and consumer credit continues to skyrocket every single month. Now, if you look at shares of AutoNation, which is car dealerships across the country, they were down 6% on Friday, got wrecked with the rest of the markets. And again, we even got this week, Ward's total vehicle sales came in at 13.5 million versus the expectation of 13.6 million. So again, car sales are declining slightly, but they're not declining too much, although the overall trend is down. 2 or 3 years ago, new car sales were coming in at around 15, 16, or 17 million. Again, today they're coming in at 13.5 million. So we do see that there has been a slowdown over the past 2 years. But again, as I've been saying, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates enough to weaken the stock market and weaken the economy, but they are not raising interest rates high enough to dissuade people from taking on new debt to buy stuff that they can't afford. And so as long as people have access to this endless amount of debt, they are going to continue to buy discretionary items. So if you're Ford or GM or Tesla or BMW or whatever car company, and you know that consumers have access to this endless amount of debt and they can continue to buy at higher and higher amounts and borrow money at higher and higher amounts, well, then you're going to be able to continue to raise your prices to recover the increased costs that you're experiencing as a business. And so as long as interest rates are low enough to where people have an extension of credit that seems endless, companies are going to continue raising their prices and inflation is going to continue to get even worse. So the Fed, again, is doing enough to slow the stock market down, to slow the housing market down, and put the economy in a recession, but they're not doing enough to actually fight off inflation and stop inflation. So again, that's why we're heading into stagflation, as I've been saying. But moving on from that, I just want to talk about the reason why credit being cheap is such a bad moral hazard for the economy, and also its effect on the auto market. Because when you go back to 2008, the bursting of the housing bubble and the inflation of the housing bubble was caused by low interest rates, because low interest rates caused for mortgage brokers and mortgage lenders to have very low standards, right? With the securitization of mortgages, the lender of mortgages no longer cared if the buyer of a home was going to pay their loan off in the future. And so credit standards dropped completely. Because with the securitization of mortgages, essentially what happened was, you know, generally speaking, in the past, banks would loan out money to people to buy a mortgage, to buy a house with a mortgage, and people would pay the bank back over time until they paid off their mortgage. Now, when a bank or a mortgage lender makes out a mortgage, they take that loan, they wrap it up with a bunch of other loans, and they sell that loan to Wall Street. Wall Street then takes those loans, packs them together into a bond, and sells the bond to an investor. So this is the same thing that is now going on in the auto market. If you've gone to buy a newer used car in recent history, in the last couple years, what you will notice is if you've tried to pay cash for the car you were buying, the salesman would have tried to push you to get an auto loan instead of paying for the car in cash. Now, the reason being is because these auto dealerships take these auto loans, package them together, and sell them to Wall Street and to investment bankers who then put those loans into a bond and sell it to an investor. And so what that creates is a huge moral hazard, because these auto dealerships don't care if the person taking the auto loan on has the actual ability to pay the loan back. And that is why auto dealerships now are giving out loans where you have $1,000 monthly mortgage monthly car payments, again, heading into a recession. How do you know someone is going to pay back all that money they owe you for that car? You don't, right? But the auto dealership doesn't give a damn, because they take that loan and sell it to someone else. So they don't care about credit quality. That is why people are getting all this access to credit to buy these cars on these extremely long loans, again, 7 or 8 years in some cases, right? Because the auto company doesn't give a damn if you pay the loan back, because it's not their problem. So again, as long as interest rates are low enough to where things like this can continue to go on and people have access to endless sums of credit, then people are going to continue spending. And if people continue spending, businesses are going to continue to raise their prices, because they're going to pass those added costs onto the customer who is showing higher amounts of demand. So again, the Federal Reserve is not doing enough to slow down the consumer taking on all this credit to continue to buy. Yes, Americans are completely broke at this point, but as long as they continue to have access to debt and no one in the economy cares if they're paying the loans back, this credit bubble is going to get bigger, and that's going to cause inflation to get even worse, again, as we head into the fall and winter months. But there is a huge auto bubble in this economy, right? And it's very obvious, but that is why you see shares of Ford, GM, Tesla all getting slammed, because again, there's a huge bubble in the auto market. You take this credit away from consumers, then the consumer is no longer going to be able to afford to buy a new or used car, right? So you have all these costs going up for Ford and GM, right? For all these electric automakers, for Tesla, for Rivian, all their costs are going up because labor costs are going up and materials costs are going up. So you have a double whammy here where these companies' costs are going up. And once this credit bubble pops, there's going to be no more demand left in the auto space. So again, you have a lot of these companies like Ford, GM, and Tesla are expanding at the complete wrong time here, right? They're expanding going into a recession, and all these stocks are going to continue to get crushed from here. Again, they're all still extremely overvalued at these prices, especially Tesla, and there's a lot of pain to come. But again, even if we look towards the housing market, it's the same dilemma for the home builders. The home builders, their costs are going up because labor costs are going up. Energy prices are going up, which means that materials prices are continuing to go up because it costs more to transport them. And yet demand is falling very quickly because interest rates are rising. And at current housing prices, nobody can afford to buy a home with the current mortgage rates that we have, which are getting back up to 7% now. So again, there's a huge slowdown in the housing market. Mortgage rates, again, topping out last week at 7%, and they have a long way to rise from here. But moving back to the market action this week, again, we see that the theme is holding up where good news is bad news and bad news is good news. And what I mean by that is looking at the market action this week, again, the market had a very strong rally Monday into Tuesday, and it was flat on Wednesday and then rolled over on Thursday and got completely clobbered on Friday. The economic data that got released this week being the catalyst for the moves in the market. Now, on Monday, we got ISM manufacturing PMI, which came in much weaker than expected, and we got construction spending month over month, which also came in much weaker than expected. Construction spending, we were expecting a slight decrease of 0.1% for the month. Instead, we got a decrease of 0.7% for the month, so much weaker than expected. Again, the housing sector is slowing down dramatically. Business growth is slowing down dramatically, so there's no construction going on in both the retail and commercial real estate market. So again, that sector is slowing. But that bad news on the economy was great news for the stock market, which led to a huge rally. And the reason it was good news for the stock market that we got bad news on the economy is that bad news on the economy has investors looking to a recession, which they believe A, will kill inflation, and B, will lead to the Federal Reserve being able to pivot on its harsh stance on raising interest rates to fight inflation. Again, investors have that wrong because a recession does not mean prices are going to come down. Again, I just explained in the auto market, we have a recession going on in the auto market because auto sales are down dramatically on a year-over-year comparison. But even though auto sales are slowing, auto companies are still able to raise their prices because there is high enough demand to buy cars at higher prices because of all the credit available to consumers. And so as long as that credit continues to be available, then inflation is going higher. So the theme that investors have is wrong, but that continues to be the theme. Now, again, the market was able to eke out a slight gain on the week. The S&P 500 finished up 0.83% on the week. But if you were paying attention to the markets on Thursday and Friday, you would have thought that the markets finished much lower this week because the markets got absolutely clobbered on Friday. Again, the catalyst on Friday being the non-farm payroll report, which came out. But before I get into that, even if you look at a five-day chart of the S&P 500, you see that it's starting to form a major head and shoulders top here. And I'm not much of a technical person, but if you make some technical analysis here, the market has to head much lower technically. And again, as I've been saying, the market has to head much lower fundamentally because there's no matter how you slice it, the market is way too expensive here for everything going wrong in the economy and for how high inflation is and for how high interest rates are likely to continue to go. But again, the S&P 500 still down 24% on the year, right? Again, it had big days on Monday and Tuesday. It was up 5.72%. That was the biggest two-day rally, by the way, for the stock market in 2 years. And by the way, there have been 11 other instances where the S&P 500 was up 2.5% on back-to-back days. And in all 11 instances, the market was heading much lower from there historically. So again, the biggest rallies occur in bear markets, and this bear market has a much longer way to go. Now, the catalyst again on Monday and Tuesday was very weak economic data. I already mentioned the construction spending month over month, as well as the ISM manufacturing data that came in weaker than expected. But on Tuesday, that rally was extended in the stock market because we again got weak economic data in the JOLTS jobs openings report. We were expecting there to be 11.07 million job openings in the economy. Instead, we only came in with 10 million job openings. So we lost a million job openings this month, which shows that companies' appetite to hire people is really slowing dramatically. Now, again, I've talked about the JOLTS number. A lot of these 10 million job openings, you have to put an asterisk on it because a lot of companies have job positions open to apply for on their websites, but they're actually not hiring. They're on hiring freezes. And in a lot of cases, these companies are already laying people off. So again, these job openings don't actually exist. These numbers are very inflated based on how many job openings are actually in the economy. We also got factory orders month over month on Tuesday, came in at 0%. So again, no growth there. Bad news on the economy was good news for stocks on Monday and Tuesday. Again, the market's completely rolled over and are sliding a false slope of hope because on Friday, the markets came in with much better than expected employment numbers, at least on the headline number, and that caused for a huge downtrend in the markets. And even if you look at the market action on Friday, technically it was very weak. Stocks started the day off down big, and they continued to roll down lower and lower and lower into the close. In fact, the selling picked up even more dramatically into the close. And so that is a very bad setup moving into Monday. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to have a Black Monday, but if ever there was a time where it was certainly possible we could have one, this would be the time because, again, the stock market just made a huge reversal from a big rally to a big sell-off last week. Again, the five-day chart just formed a huge head and shoulders top. So the fundamentals are lining up. The technicals are lining up. And again, the economy continues to show signs that we are heading, not only heading, but we're already there. We're already in stagflation. Higher prices with lower growth. That means that, again, higher inflation is going to lead to higher interest rates. Higher interest rates are going to thus weaken the economy even more. That puts corporate earnings into jeopardy, and so on and so forth. But on Friday, again, with the employment data, non-farm payrolls, we were expecting to add 248,000 jobs into the economy. Instead, we added in 263,000 jobs. So we had a beat there. Again, that is in line with what happened last month, and the job market, at least on the headline numbers, remains extremely strong. Average hourly earnings month over month came in at expectations. They were up 0.3%. So again, that is more inflationary pressure because that is a cost businesses are paying, and those businesses are going to pass those added costs on to customers in the fall and winter months to come. And interestingly enough, even though we added more jobs than expected, and even though we added jobs in general, the unemployment rate, it fell from 3.7% to 3.5%. But I want to go and look at where we added these jobs in the non-farm payroll report. Because again, like any other non-farm payroll report, it's very important to look where the jobs are actually being added to see if it represents economic strength or weakness. Now, again, the unemployment rate dropped from 3.7% to 3.5%. So again, this supposed strength in the labor market has investors very worried that the economy is going to continue to overheat, that inflation is going to continue to run out of control. And so they are thinking that the Federal Reserve is going to have to fight even harder to fight this inflation, which means higher future interest rates. And that's why, again, the markets got clobbered on Friday after the release of these numbers. But average hourly earnings rose by 5% year over year. And again, we see that there is more pressure on businesses with their cost pressures, and that means that costs are going to go up for consumers in the future. But like most non-farm payroll reports that we've gotten in the past year, the leading industry adding jobs was leisure and hospitality. So leisure and hospitality added 83,000 jobs. Healthcare added 60,000 jobs. Professional and business services added 46,000. Manufacturing and construction added 22,000 and 19,000. So again, a lot of weakness there. Wholesale trade added 11,000. And then we lost 25,000 government jobs. And then we also lost 8,000 financial services jobs and 8,000 warehousing jobs. So looking at the report in its entirety, leisure and hospitality represented 31% of all the jobs added in the economy. So again, what does that mean? That means a lot of people are picking up second part-time jobs to help cope with inflation, working as bartenders or waiters or waitresses, right? These are very low-paying jobs. These are people taking either second part-time jobs, or maybe if you had a household where only one spouse was working, another spouse went and got a part-time job to help make ends meet. You also have a lot of these jobs were probably taken by retirees that came out of retirement. One, because the cost of living is rising dramatically, but two, because their stock portfolios are down so much this year. And because interest rates have been so low for so long, a lot of retirees haven't been generating ample enough income to sustain their retirement. So again, that is a reason for why unemployment rates probably dropped. Also, though, interestingly enough, labor force participation also dropped. So labor force participation dropped to 62.3%, and the size of the labor force decreased by 57,000. So again, unemployment rate fell, but that's mainly because you have people are being considered discouraged workers now. They've been unemployed for more than a year, so they no longer count as being unemployed technically. Again, you have people entering the job market that were not considered to be unemployed in the first place, like, again, retirees that are having to go back to work to make ends meet. Right. And then again, people taking on part-time jobs and what have you. But again, overall, even though the headline number came in very strong, this shows the weakness in the overall economy. You would not have 83,000 Americans taking on leisure and hospitality jobs if the economy was strong. Because if the economy was strong, people would not need second part-time jobs. They're one and only job would be enough for them to pay the bills and have discretionary money left over. But that's not the case, obviously, because the savings rate is at its lowest rate since 2007. And again, that is forcing people into the labor market. So the labor market remains strong on the surface, but when you take a look at the numbers beneath the surface, it remains incredibly weak. And that is, again, something that investors still are not understanding. Speaking of a weak labor market, we received news this week that GE is going to be laying off 20% of its U.S. workforce, specifically its workforce devoted to onshore wind power, which is going to cost the economy hundreds of jobs. Now, GE is going to move forward as it's going to face a lot of problems, right, because of stagflation. Again, they have rising input costs, they continue to see supply chain issues occurring, and they are facing competition from different businesses. And so they're seeing that there's problems in their business model with their costs. So again, that's causing them to lay off workers. So we see that inflation continues to actually weaken the economy in and of itself. Now, again, that destroys the narrative that an overheating economy is what causes inflation, because inflation is occurring even though the economy continues to get weaker and weaker. So again, there is no reason to assume that if we have a recession, that in and of itself is going to cause prices to go down. And again, I laid out just a few minutes ago why that's the case. But again, GE, another example, I mentioned on the JOLTS report, we have 10 million job openings in the economy. But if you go to GE's website, They still have hundreds of job applications for job positions open on their website, but they just laid off 20% of its workforce devoted to onshore wind power. Again, that is just in one sector so far, but if they're laying workers off in a big area of their business, certainly they're not hiring at huge rates for other parts of their businesses. So I would suspect a lot of the job postings on GE's website are not actually job openings. They just have the positions open so people can apply, send their resumes in, and then if GE decides they want to hire in the future, they have the resumes which they can go through, but these job openings are not real job openings. So again, the labor market, when you look beneath the surface, is much weaker than people think that it is. And again, this all shows that investors are still thinking backwards. Good news is bad news is good news, right? At some point, people are going to recognize that bad news on the economy should not be good news for the stock market, because bad news on the economy is not going to lead to lower inflation in the future. That is why every time we get bad economic data, the market rallies, because the market is looking forward to less inflation and therefore a more easy Fed that doesn't have to raise interest rates to fight that inflation. The markets have that wrong because we are going to get a weaker economy, but we're going to get it with higher inflation as well. And that is where, again, investors have this all wrong. Now, if you look at what happened in the Treasury market this week, again, at the beginning of the week, there was a lot of false hope that yields had pretty much had a top and that yields were going to come back down. Again, on Friday, all that action reversed. On Friday, the U.S. 10-year topped out at 3.888%. And even if you look at the 30-year Treasury bond, rates on the 30-year topped out at 3.848%. But over both Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we had huge jumps in yields across the board from the 3-month Treasury bill all the way to the 30-year government bond. And again, one of the biggest signs of recession, which we're already in one, but one of the biggest signs that a recession is going to get even worse is if the yield curve continues to invert, meaning that rates on the long end of the curve in the Treasury market are lower than rates at the shorter end of the curve. So if people are buying more long-term government bonds, which pushes those yields down relative to the yields on the shorter end of the curve, it shows a lot of investors are pessimistic on the economy, pessimistic on their outlook in the stock market, and that is exactly what we're seeing play out in the bond market here. So if you look at the yield on a two-year treasury, the yield there is 4.31%. Then if you go to the yield on the one-year T-bill, that is 4.18%. And then the yield on a six-month treasury bill is 4.08%. So we have the yield curve is inverted from the 30-year all the way down to the six-month T-bill. Now, that is the biggest inversion that we've had yet in the bond market. So the bond market yield curve continues to worsen dramatically, therefore, every single week over the past several months. And so again, this is signs that the economy is getting weaker and weaker. This is a very bad sign for stocks moving forward. And the problem is stocks don't even have the worst priced in. Now, again, typically in a bear market, investors would buy bonds because they want to get some exposure out of stocks, which should be weak, and get more safety in treasury bonds. And that would normally push interest rates down, which would provide some relief to the stock market. In this case, that's not happening because even though we see a lot of stock market weakness, we do not have a lot of people jumping into bonds because they're worried about interest rate risk and inflation risk. And they're also worried about the Federal Reserve selling a lot of their bonds. But I do think a lot of investors still remain clueless and are buying treasury bonds here because they don't really understand how bad this inflation problem is going to get. But eventually, the bond market is going to have to start pricing in much longer inflation expectations, right? And that is going to cause yields to rise even more. Because again, if you're going to buy, let's say, for example, a one-year T-bill, which yields 4.1%, you have to expect that over the next 12 months, the inflation rate is going to come down from 8.5% to sub 4.1%. Because if it does not, that means that you're going to get a negative real yield, and there's no reason why you would loan money to get less back in the future. And so if inflation does not slow down, people are going to recognize that they can't buy bonds because they're not safe. Because when you have inflation, the value of the dollar is going down. When you are buying bonds, bonds are a promise to pay you dollars in the future. So the only thing worse than holding dollars in an inflationary period is holding treasury bonds. So again, a lot of these bonds are going to have to start at some point pricing in much longer inflation expectations, which means interest rates have to go much higher. And again, all else being equal, interest rates go higher, then the stock market and stock prices have to go lower. Now, again, part of what's going on in the bond market is that the Federal Reserve is also continuing to sell assets off its balance sheet. The Federal Reserve, being the biggest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds and mortgage-backed securities in the world, is starting to shrink their balance sheet so that they can shrink the money supply. So they're selling bonds into the market that they own. This week, they shrank their balance sheet from $8.79 trillion to $8.75 trillion of assets. Now, again, that only represents a 0.4% reduction in their balance sheet this week. So again, barely a drop in the bucket. They have so many assets on their balance sheet that they have to sell into the market to shrink the money supply. They're barely doing any of it, and the bond market still can't hold up, right? The bond market weakness is significant, yet the Federal Reserve has barely made a dent in their balance sheet over the past 2 months since they started selling their assets off. And again, this shows me, and it should show you, that the Federal Reserve is never going to be able to shrink their balance sheet in a meaningful way, right? Could you imagine if the Federal Reserve starts shrinking its balance sheet by 3 or 4 or 5 or 6% each week? Then the bond market could have a complete collapse, a complete crash, right? And look, that crash in the bond market is coming whether the Federal Reserve sells these assets off its balance sheet or not. Because again, either the Fed sells the bonds off its balance sheet and contracts the money supply and lets interest rates rise substantially to actually deter inflation, or they don't do that, inflation runs out of control, and then investors realize that they can't hold bonds because they're a completely risky asset, and so they sell those bonds and then yields soar anyway. And again, once yields soar, whether it be because of option A or option B, the stock market has to continue to crash from here. And again, the stock market being down 24% this year is just the start in this bear market. We have to head much lower from here, no matter how you cut it. So again, to wrap up the podcast, as long as rates keep rising, stocks are going to continue to fall. This is early days in this bear market. And it's entirely possible that we won't see returns on the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ for years, right? This is going to be a bloodbath for investors as we continue to move forward with higher inflation, slower growth. And even if you think about it, there's been one thing that's been holding the stock market up relatively well to this point. Again, we're down 24%, but that's not even that bad considering some of the other crashes we've had in history and considering where we are in the economy. But the one thing that the stock market has been able to hang its hat on has been corporate earnings. Corporate earnings to this point have held up very well. Now, again, part of that is because businesses have been able to pass higher costs on to customers because credit and interest rates remain too low to deter people from borrowing money. And so therefore, that's making it easy for corporations to pass higher costs on. But again, if that continues to be the case, then earnings are going to continue to hold up for stocks, but that means that inflation is going to get worse and worse, which means that interest rates are going to keep going higher in the future, which will then continue to bring down stock market multiples and therefore stock market prices. However, if we do get a reduction in inflation, which I doubt is going to happen, but even if it does, stock prices still have to come down because that means corporate earnings will come down. And again, the S&P 500 is still trading at 18 times trailing earnings as of right now, as we go into this Monday. So again, the stock market historically is still very expensive. Historically speaking, the market, the S&P usually trades anywhere from 12 to 14 times earnings. So again, we're about 25% too expensive on the S&P on a historical basis. And it's again, because interest rates are still very low in the economy. They've gone up a lot in the past year. They've gone up a lot in the past couple months, but historically interest rates are still extremely low. And again, that is why inflation is not going to stop, because interest rates are too low. People are still encouraged to borrow money. They are being discouraged to save money. And so that is creating more and more demand for people to buy stuff, which means that businesses can keep raising their prices. Aside from that, with the lack of savings that we have in the U.S. economy, again, the savings rate is at its lowest since 2007. That means that there's not enough money being saved for capital investment, which is going to, you know, capital investment is what allows business formation and allows for more product and service to be created. And so with that not happening, that means supply is going to remain low in the economy as well. So again, you have supply remaining low and you have demand continuing to remain high, which means that prices have to continue to rise until that dynamic changes. But again, that dynamic won't change unless the Federal Reserve gets really serious about fighting inflation, and they are showing no signs of that. Again, the Federal Reserve shrinking their balance sheet by 0.4% this week is not them being serious about fighting inflation. But again, even the market can't even handle that small amount of selling by the Federal Reserve to shrink the money supply. So if the Fed gets serious in shrinking the money supply, and if the Fed gets serious in raising interest rates to a level where we have positive real interest rates, which would be 4 or 5% higher than we are right now, the market is going to completely crash. The market can't handle higher interest rates. The housing market can't handle higher interest rates. And the economy certainly cannot handle higher interest rates because, again, one person's spending is another person's income. All of the spending right now is based on credit that people are taking on, all of which would not be available if interest rates rise. So again, once the dollar starts to weaken, which it will eventually, inflation pressures are going to continue to rise. Again, we saw a huge spike in oil prices this week. That is going to cause prices across the economy to rise for, again, the next several months. And once people recognize how bad the inflation problem is in the United States and that the Federal Reserve is not willing to do what it takes to fight it, the dollar is going to start to fall. The dollar has just gone through what I believe is a massive blow-off top, and once that trend reverses, the dollar is going lower, which means inflation is going to continue to get even worse than it has been in the United States. And so investors are going to have to start pricing in much longer inflation expectations into bonds. Consumers are going to start to expect more inflation, so they're going to buy more in bulk to avoid that future inflation. That's going to cause future supply shortages, and that's going to make inflation a self-perpetuating spiral. And that means that both interest rates are going to rise tremendously and stock prices are going to collapse tremendously. Now, again, the one thing the market has been able to hang on to has been corporate earnings. This week, we kick off corporate earnings, right? So we're going to get some of the bank stocks report this week, and then some major corporations are going to report in the next couple weeks. And if earnings go down, the stock market is going to go down. But again, even if earnings hold up, that means that businesses are passing higher costs on to customers. And that means that the market has to go down as well, because that means inflation will remain high and so will interest rates. Either way, the stock market has to go down. And again, there's going to be a collapse in the bond market at some point. That's going to send bond yields soaring, and that is going to cause a collapse in the stock market. So I will be back next week to break down some of the earnings calls that we have this upcoming week. But again, we had a very, very bad day on the markets on Friday. The action looked very weak, especially at the second half of the day. We really started to sell off lower and lower, and we sold off very heavily into the close. So the markets have a much longer way to fall here. And just remember, there is a lot longer to fall, and you can wait to buy stocks. Now, again, there are still a lot of good value stocks out there at reasonable prices, especially some of the consumer staple stocks like the General Mills or Kellogg's of the world. A lot of healthcare companies are still at reasonable prices, oil companies still at reasonable prices. But when it comes to the discretionary stocks, you have a long way to wait. When it comes to tech stocks, you have a long way to wait. These prices are going to continue to fall. And just remember that we are early days in this bear market, and that stocks slide a false slope of hope in bear markets. That's it for now.